Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Books in the Biz. I'm back here with Rich. Rich, how are you doing?
I'm good. Dan, how are you?
Well, by the sounds of it, before we got on here, doing a little bit better than you are. Got a little bit of insanity going on, but that would be why we do what we do. Well, welcome everybody. If you haven't seen our post for the day or what our subject is about, we're going to talk about employment again. Yeah. Rich, what's
big
going
topic,
on?
Big topic. It's crazy out there. trying to figure some things out. Look, it's great for the outsource market, but it's kind of, there's this disconnect, if you ask me. I'm not sure which screen you popped up there, but you know, I've been seeing an awful lot of disconnects between the employer and the staff and just matching up pay level with task level and who's doing what. There just seems to be a very jumbled kind of non-communicative kind of discussion going on. And I'd really like to see that fixed somehow, but I don't know. Hopefully this isn't a trend.
Well, I think it is a trend. I don't think it's going to get any better. So on my end, similar situations to you, but I run into more of the problems where I'm working with the owner. We go through and lay out everything that needs to be done. We start prioritizing it. And then he gives me or she gives me the blank stare and says, now who's going to do all this? Because it can't be just me. And I'm like, well, who else do you have on your staff? And, you know, they might have employees. They might have employees with some experience, but they don't have employees with what I call senior experience. So our discussion today is really more about filling those executive level talent shoes or somebody who is more than just like a entry level or midterm. What I've seen happening in the economy is it seems like the hourly employee thing is kind of straightening itself out, but we don't have enough people with years of skill set built up that can fill key leadership roles in companies. And what you pointed out earlier, I pulled up an article here. So for those listening, this is from Mercer.com. And the statement basically says, if a recession is not a barrier to growth, a talent shortage is. 50% of executives anticipate they will struggle to meet demand with their current talent model. Another 35% of executives feel confident that they can quickly scale talent needs up and down. I will question that. And 57% of organizations are planning to let staff go, especially those operating through competitive environments. So it's kind of a mixed bag out there. But I think when you're looking at one in two companies, don't believe that they can find the staff necessary to fill their talent model, that should be of concern to everybody.
Yeah. It is a concern. I think it should be a concern. I think everybody should be putting up some alarm bells because it really does question. I mean, I don't think it necessarily questions why this has happened, because you and I have been talking about it for months now. Mm-hmm. So to be back on the, you know, employment topic is, you know, a wild ride to still be kind of coming back to this, because usually there'd be some ebb and flow and you're like, oh, okay, everything's getting better. But I don't see that. And to see that still continuing or forecasted that it's going to continue to be that way, that's really scary. I'm definitely running into it on the, you know, accounting and finance side. I can only imagine what's happening on more of the operational side or, you know, manufacturing side, warehousing side. Like, there's just this lack of, I don't know whether it's that the people were never groomed to be at that next level or, you know, but you're winding up paying the executive level salary for someone who can't do the job. So It's very frustrating, as you can probably hear in my voice.
Well, I think it's just frustrating for all of us because, as I mentioned, you know, you're trying to help a company along. You know they have talent needs. They start to become aware they have talent needs. To your point, I think there has been limited training on how to move somebody into kind of an executive leadership role in a lot of companies. Not all companies. There are some companies I work with that have a very good career track for people who do want to move into more of a upper level management role. But those companies, I would say, are few and far between. You know, if we look at the bulk of businesses that are in the US, most of them are relatively small to medium sized companies. In a lot of cases, they don't have formal training. They don't have, you know, any methodology for moving somebody out of their current role. In fact, when you talk with a lot of business owners, they kind of like when people kind of stick in the role they're in. As much as I hate to say that, but if somebody's doing a really good job, they know what a challenge is to replace that person with somebody else and then move that person up. And then that person's kind of doing two different roles and they get burned out. Again, because there often isn't a real good training program in place. There isn't a passing of the baton, if you will, to the next level of leadership coming in. And to me, that's what I see is probably being one of the bigger problems. I pulled this article up from it's AESC.org. The article is Implications of a Global Executive Talent Shortage. So in this one, they're talking about global, not just U.S., and they even highlighted this. The shortage of executive talent is amplified by similar business needs across organizations worldwide. So again, it's that whole supply and demand thing. We have more jobs than we have people to fill those jobs. The demand for new roles where 20 years or more of relevant experience is just not feasible, and we find ourselves in a candidate's market. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I guess we have to go. And I mean, you could really pick that one apart. So the global part of it just adds more complication, right? Because mm-hmm. I can find people that have domestic talent. I can find people that have talent overseas, but the combination of both, you know, you're just the skill set's missing.
Right.
You know, I happen to work for a very large firm. International was not foreign, you know, to make a joke, right? It wasn't
right.
you could see it. You were always dealing with somebody who was shipping or was dealing with something that included foreign countries. So, but when you get to the smaller firms, they never saw it. Like you almost never saw, if you were in a smaller accounting firm doing accounting work, you were doing domestic accounting work. And way back when, you were only working in your state. It was like, you didn't even see things that went across multi-states. So mm-hmm. how do you get people now that have that experience that included those states? You know, you work for a bigger firm, fine, you probably did see it. But if you work for a smaller one, which there are a lot more smaller ones than there are big ones, then you might not have seen it. You didn't have the experience. So now someone has to pay you to take that upper level role and you have to figure it out. So, and the employer has to pay you to learn. Which they don't usually like to hear, that I have to pay you to learn the job. Like, I'm paying you at the salary level of the job, and yet you have to learn how to do the job. You know, they don't like that. That's kind of the miss that I'm seeing, that you have to pay someone to learn how to do it, and they should already know. So that's the hard part. You're trying to force something that's not necessarily workable.
Yeah. I mean, we're always paying somebody to learn their job. I don't think that's an unusual part. But what you said that was key to that is you're paying somebody a salary that they should already know that job.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get somebody with maybe 5 to 7 years of experience to get to 20 plus years of experience in about 6 months, which really doesn't work too well.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, you know, your point's well taken, right? That you are always paying someone to learn the job as it applies to your company. So if correct. I'm hiring somebody to come in, they have to learn my company. They don't mm-hmm. necessarily have to learn how to add 1 + 1 or how to add you know, the core competencies that they should have should be there. And
right.
some of those do come with a year of experience, and some of them with, you know, putting your neck out a little bit, putting your foot out a little bit. You know, I didn't get to where I am, and I didn't get to advise companies without at some point sticking my neck out and saying, God, I hope it doesn't get chopped off. You know, you're taking that leap of faith that you have enough skill set, but you're going to jump into something to make sure that you learn more. I go into every job expecting I'm going to learn something that I can take to the next job. And where I'm missing it is when I see somebody that says, well, you know, I was in a CFO role. Okay, what'd you do? Mm-hmm. You know, what did you do in that CFO role? Give me some examples. And when they're not there, you just, that's not the person you're going to hire.
Exactly.
So I guess to summarize it, you know, hire, yes, understanding they're going to learn your company, but they should have core skills.
Correct. They should. And often that again is what's lacking. And part of that, I think, is in the demographics of you know, what's kind of happening here. I pulled up another article. This was in KornFerry.com, KornFerry.com, if you want to look it up. In the United States, the majority of baby boomers will have moved out of the workforce by 2030. And to me, that right there is a key indicator of the situation we're in, is the people with the most experience have either retired or are retiring within roughly the next 6 years. And at that point, you have Gen X, which is a smaller generation. You then have the millennials, which I think is a pretty good sized generation, but are they getting the experience they need? Because there's right. fewer managers or fewer senior leaders. And then, of course, you'll have your Gen Zs that are coming up as well. We're losing a lot of highly skilled people to retirement, old age. And I just haven't seen where we've done a really good job of replacing that skill set with the next generations coming up. Now, if you're a millennial or anything like that and you want to post an argument, please feel free to do so. But I'm just not seeing it.
No, I'm not seeing it either. And there's a little bit of a disconnect, right? I mean, the baby boomers, you know, and I'm, I don't mean to stereotype when I do this, but I'm seeing mm-hmm. sort of that tech divide, you know,
yes.
where you've got the older school, you know, baby boomer types that had, you know, they were set in their ways. They knew how to do things, process oriented, very process oriented, not so much tech oriented. Some of them are. So I don't want to, you know, don't call me up yelling at me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Some of them are very tech oriented, but not to the level of the people behind us.
Correct.
You know, the people coming up grew up with technology. You and I saw it come in. You and I watched
yes.
it implemented over our lifetime.
We were the bridge.
So far, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I left college and basically had my first computer. So like, you know, now, you know, kids have five of them, you know,
mm-hmm.
and everything they operate with has 100 chips in it doing something for them, right? You know, I can only
yep.
imagine how many chips are in my kid's car, you know? So the technology piece, I think, is a big divide. And I think those people behind us have an idea that's following the tech path. So how do they get into, you know, how do we get those people to realize that some of you have to go and take over what's been going on for the baby boomers who are now leaving, and you have whole businesses looking for places to go because they can't get over that tech divide. So there's a, I think there's a matching kind of chasm there between the two pieces.
Agreed. I also see that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about AI and AI replacing certain jobs or certain, you know, tasks. I struggle with AI becoming too much of a crutch, because AI is only as good as the you know, the person who taught the system, if you will. Person who
right.
initially wrote the code is really the limitations of what that AI can do. We have generations that are now becoming so dependent on technology doing stuff for them that I believe we're losing some of that critical problem-solving skills that, you know, really what made the boomers and Gen X pretty strong. They were resourceful in other ways, not necessarily through technology. I mean, you think of the stuff that we created back in the 50s and 60s, everything from the Saturn rocket project to take us to the moon to, you know, I remember reading about the SR-71 fighter that was created. It was done off of slide rules and drafting paper.
Yeah.
There were no computers involved, and they actually ran it through a computer, and the computer couldn't do it any better than the drafters could that created that project, you know, well ahead of where computers took over. So you start losing a lot of skill sets, and you start assuming that technology is going to make up for it. And I think we're running into a situation where we're kind of on that cusp of, you know, we need people with skills, but we're running out of it, and the people coming up are using technology to replace the critical thinking and learning that, you know, we need to succeed.
Yeah. I definitely worry about that. I have the same fear, especially when I get an email that still has blocks in it, like, you know, dear applicant, dear, you know, like nobody took the time to check. Nobody took the time to make sure that it's working. Well, AI did it. It's all good. Okay.
Yeah.
I've read some of the AI articles that have come out, and I'm amazed that somebody let it go the way that it reads. I've had AI rewrite some of my stuff, and then I'll reread it and say that changed what I was trying to say. You know, yes. Grammatically it was correct. You know, it was a good piece, but it was, you know, a paragraph and a half, and all of a sudden that wasn't my point. You know, it changed the focus of the article to something else. All the words were there, but it changed the focus and basically told everybody something almost the opposite of what I was trying to get across. So I had to rewrite it. So, but if that means that some of the stuff that's come out that I've read, you know, was done by AI, how do I know that it really is the thoughts of the author? How do I know that it really is something, right, that they wanted to tell me? How do I know it's the right thought? How do I know it's the right advice? So that's what scares me as well. Just I can't let things go that way. But I guess that goes back to the point of what's the age difference too. Like, I'll send a text message and I'm looking for, did I put a comma in the right place? Did I put that, you know, did I close the sentence? And then I'll deal with somebody on the younger generation who's texting me. There's no punctuation whatsoever. So I'm left to kind of figure out what they're saying. So because they have their own language, they've come up with their own right. way of doing things. So again, back to that chasm between, you know, how things went before and how things went now, what does the future look like?
That is a very good question. I think that's something that, you know, we have to try and answer, not necessarily just you and I, but I think as the generations start leaving the workforce, we've got to figure out how we give people critical thinking skills, you know, research and development skills, things like that, that are really, you know, not passed along as much as they should. And, you know, I don't know what you're seeing in finance, but to me, well, I mean, we both do it really. It's the fractional stuff. We need to tap into that talent level that maybe doesn't want to work full time, but maybe still doesn't want to golf 7 days a week, and get them involved and get them to kind of help in this transition and help get a new generation prepared for senior leadership. And I know you do it from a fractional level at a CFO. I do it from a operations level. I think that becomes an even greater part of what we do over the, you know, the coaching and consulting part.
I think that's part of the reason why the fractionals has grown at the rate that it's grown. I think there's a lot of people out there who talk down about it, saying it's not the right way to go, but I think it might actually be the right way to go. There's enough people out there against it, you know, sort of saying we just like it traditional, but the traditional, I don't think solves the problem. I think traditional is somewhat the problem because you're not going to get the younger generation focused in the same way as you are. So staying traditional and saying my method's the best method, you know, I think somewhere along the line, you're going to have to open up your mind and look and say, you know, I have to adapt at least somewhat. And I think the younger generation has to do a little bit of the same and say, well, I have to adapt somewhat, and maybe I can find a way to take all the tech and everything I really like and apply it to the larger, instead of just saying, I just don't want that, which seems to be right. The common answer. I don't want to do what my father did. You know, right. Okay, we get that. So change it. Like be the change, you know, the change influencer that's going to allow you to do that, you know.
So but then have somebody with experience who can hold you accountable. That's the part that's missing.
Yeah. So I think there's definitely work to be done. I think fractionals is going to really continue to grow. And I think, you know, trying to simplify it into, you know, into just being, well, it just means part-time. It's just a fancy word for part-time. No, it doesn't. It means that you're part-time, but you're part-time bringing a larger skill set or bringing a leadership role, as opposed to, well, you know, look, if you want to call it part-time, go ahead. But if you're going to call it part-time, I'm going to call you a bookkeeper, or I'm going to call you
right.
a staff person, right? So if you're looking for leadership at a fractional, you know, at a part-time fractional, you know, that makes sense, because you're tapping into a resource, you're tapping into a leadership, you're tapping into a knowledge base that allows you to get across that. So I think if I really had to say what our role is, you and me, I think our mm-hmm. role is bridging that chasm that I keep talking about today. You know, I think we have right. to be the ones who are going to bridge that and say, guys, at your, you know, you want to retire, you know, and you're going to go down this path. In order to do that, you need a suitor. Okay, how do we find you one? How do we tell somebody you're going to be the suitor for this business, and here's your opportunity to be the next, you know, Elon Musk or something that comes up with a technology that's going to help you do this job in a different way than your father, your grandfather did. So I think there's work to be done on our end that will allow us to bring those two together.
Right. Well, and this goes back to a point you made earlier. You know, you said, there's people getting paid at a pay grade that is well above their experience level. Do you know off the top of your head what the average CFO makes for a company? Is it in the 250 range?
I think lower that's than a that, good, higher than that? I think that's a good number.
Okay.
Here's the problem. The problem is, if you look at a different area in the country, and yes, I have looked at it, so that's why I'm yes. feeling confident to answer you. So depending on the size of the company,
right. Okay.
Depending on, you know, to a certain extent, skill set, but for the most part, I would say it depends on the size of the company and location.
Right.
Okay. I think a New York CFO and a, you know, Nebraska CFO will have a vastly different number. Okay.
Right.
I think 250 is probably a good sort of average. Okay.
Right.
Because I can see 250, even the New York range on a smaller company. But on a larger right. company, you might be looking at closer to 400 plus. You're talking right. about a public company. Public company, forget about it. It's a completely different conversation.
Exactly.
But then somewhere in the Midwest and agriculture or something else, a different kind of industry, you might be looking at something a little bit lower. But the task level is also a little bit different. So,
sure.
Again, not sure also what the growth potential is. Like if you're trying to get to an IPO, you know, eventually you're not going to be paying somebody $150,000. They won't have the skill set to be able to take it to an IPO level. So, right. but I think 250 is probably a nice little average number across the board.
Yep. So even if you're saying 250, and even if we said knock that average down to 150, you know, let's just take the Midwest example. Mm-hmm. If you're paying $150,000 for somebody who doesn't have the experience to do the job, is it really worth it? Yes, you got a body in there and you are basically paying for their training up, but then they have nobody to learn from. So they're either got to be really smart and really resourceful and figure it out, or you're going to put them in a position of failure. And to me, that's where the fractional comes in, because you could pay that fractional person less than half of that 150, for example, and they could bring in the level of experience to help you get those people up to speed and at the experience level you need. So I don't think either one of us looks at a fractional job as being a lifetime sentence where we come work for you and for 40 years we're doing that fractional work, or somebody else is doing that fractional work, because there's a number of companies out there that are doing it now. having the fractional, what you're paying for is you're paying for the experience you can't get anywhere else. And, you know, I don't know of a lot of small to medium sized companies that are going to look at their payroll and say, can I really absorb somebody making $150,000 or $250,000 a year? It's the same on the operations side. If you're looking for somebody at a senior operations level, you are probably in the 180 to 200 range pretty easily. And then usually there's benefits and incentives and bonuses and everything else that goes into that. So you start factoring in that you can gain experience, yes, for a limited amount of time in your company, but I still find a lot of companies don't need somebody 40 hours a week. They have employees that can do the work. They need somebody with the experience that can guide the employees to do the work and train up the ones that are going to take on a greater role in the future. Right. So to me, that's a huge cost savings, especially when it comes to payroll, that you can really tap into experience that's well above your pay grade without having to pay the full freight of that. So that's where I think fractional work is going to really take off, whether it's marketing, whether it's finance, whether it's operations, you know, even in HR, we're seeing HR come in at fractional levels. So you can get a senior HR person instead of, you know, maybe just somebody in the front office who happens to like HR and benefits and handles, you know, that part of it. There's a lot of ways you can tap into these people to really make a difference in your organization.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, just as a sort of passing add-on to what you said, you know, I think if people start looking at the task as opposed to the position, you know, start looking at what do you want this person to do for you? If you can come up with that answer, then you can justify in your head, well, this person's going to come in, they're going to spend 10 hours a week, and they're going to optimize my process in the warehouse or in the manufacturing process. They're going to see where we can streamline, and then they pay for themselves in the cost savings of what process they gave you. And I kind of do the same thing. I look for the opportunity that when I come in, I try to come up with something that pays for me, you know, pays for me to be there. And it's not just to justify why I'm there. It's to justify to the owner that, see, we already found this and we did it quickly. Because usually there's a fast thing that you can see, and you make that change and someone says, oh, I just saved that much money. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we move on to task number two. So these could just be project based. This could be, I'm just going to look at my finance process. I'm going to look at, you know, whether or not it makes sense. I'm going to look at the fact that one job I walked into, they had 16 people. I said, why do you have 16 people work in the accounting department? Like, explain to me why there's that many people on there. So then once those people started to quit for whatever reason or move on, because there was a big change in the world of where accountants could go for a while there, we let them go and we didn't replace them because we fixed the process. We didn't need 16 people. So you saved money when they left and you didn't lose efficiency. Your process was still now working. So these are the types of things that people should use fractionals for, because once their project is done, they're off your payroll too. You know, exactly. I used to joke when I came in, you know, I'm coming in to work myself out of a job.
Yeah. You
know, because I knew that eventually you wouldn't need me anymore, or I'd be your resource when you did have a next level, you know, crisis or next level question. But for that point, I was working to the point where I was going to be out of the position, and I was fine with it because that's what the role is. Now I'll go work for somebody else till you need me next time.
Yep. Or you stay on as more of an advisory role with, and that changes the investment too. You're now that guidance point for the people that you trained up. I see the same thing on the operations side. You know, systematizing what you do is probably one of the most tedious issues that most businesses address, which is why it's almost never done. It's just knowledge handed down from one person to the next, but it's never documented, nor is it never optimized. That is a huge, huge issue, which often leads to significant cost increases, makes the job that much more difficult, leads to employee burnout because often they have to figure out what the previous person did and start from scratch. So if you look at it that way, that you have somebody come in to help you systematize everything that you do and find out where those gaps are and reduce the number of touch points or improve quality levels or look for other efficiencies, that can be a huge savings in and of itself that can also pay for that person to be in there.
Right.
So we haven't solved the world's problems, but I think we've given a good case for why maybe you need to think outside the box of who you hire, when you hire, what you hire, and how you have that person work for you. While it's not necessarily a shameless plug for us, I will definitely say we can help with that. Rich, if they are looking for help from you, how do they get a hold of you?
Email is always the best at rveltry@veltrygroup.com.
Excellent. And to get a hold of me, just go to danpaulsonletsgo.com and you can check the boxes and get the information you need there. Either one of us can help you figure out how to optimize your business. The reality is, as we pointed out, if you're looking for a quick fix, AI is not going to be it. It's going to help in some areas, but it's not going to solve all your problems. If you're looking for those magic people out there that are miraculously going to spring out underneath mushrooms or ride in on unicorns, they're probably not going to show up, are they?
No.
I didn't think so. I was hoping for the unicorn solution, but that doesn't appear to be working out today.
No, I'm all right, thinking Rich. I'm in my box here. I don't see any unicorns. Okay.
Well, check again this week, and we'll see if we can come up with some next week. But thank you for your time, and we will talk again next week about a new and exciting subject.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care.
All right, Dan.